Right, I've started the recorder. And let's see. Okay, yep, NTI 2 Corinthians chapter 9 in my Kindle, it's page 318.
319.
319 in the paperback book. All right, here we go. When you believe in the world, you make the mistake of acting out of your belief in the world.
You know, that's not what the...
It's not what yours says? Or what yours say?
No, of in there. It says, when you believe in the world, you make the mistake of acting out your belief in the world.
Oh, that's what mine says, too. I put the of in there, I guess.
She was just kidding.
So we are listening, yes.
Oh, yes, very good. Paying attention. When you believe in the world, you make the mistake of acting out your belief in the world. How is this a mistake, truly? Is it a mistake because you took an action you shouldn't have? Is this a mistake because you have revealed yourself to your brothers as less than what they thought you were? Is this a mistake within the world for which you are guilty? This is what you believe. But you believe this because you believe the world is true. And this is why acting in the world is a mistake. Acting on your belief that the world is real is a mistake because it continues the belief within the mind. So really what he's talking about here is conditioning. The most primary type of conditioning of all, you know, this is who I am, and this world is very real. And what he's saying is, you know, every time you act on that conditioning, you reinforce that conditioning. And that's why it's a mistake. It's not because you did a bad thing, you know, it's not because you did something that's going to make everybody else think you're not a cool person. It's just that you're continually reinforcing this conditioning, which isn't true. And you know, that's going to be, of course, an obstacle to awakening to what is true. So one of the things that I learned to do, I learned to, when I noticed that my ego thoughts, my wrong-minded thoughts, were telling me, for example, to be upset and tell Jasmine to go away. You know, that was a common one. I used to always perceive her as disturbing me when I was trying to do emails or whatever and she wanted my attention, right? She was disturbing me. So my ego thoughts would be, tell her to go away, tell her tell her I'm busy, right? And I would purposefully, like, you're going to be Jasmine for now, okay? I'm sitting here typing, you're there nagging me, right? That's my perception. You're nagging me, and my mind's just saying, tell her to go away, tell her to go away. I would purposely take my hands off the keyboard, turn my body around, even point my toes right at her, and say, yes, Jasmine, what do you want? Because I knew that if I said, go away, I'm busy, I was just going to reinforce the conditioning of the world, reinforce the conditioning of the false self. So even though you could even say the impulse was strong, like I could feel the annoyance. It's not like I didn't feel it.
Yeah.
But I took the opposite action anyway. Because, not because I thought I was guilty, but because I wanted to be a part of undoing that conditioning, right? So just because our mind is telling us to do something doesn't mean we have to do it. In fact, again, this is what I love about the revolver, is that's what Jake demonstrates at the end of the revolver, is not listening to his conditioned thoughts. You know, his conditioned thoughts are telling him to kill him, kill him, kill him. And he lays down his gun, gets on his knees, and apologizes to his enemy. So he's doing the opposite of what his mind is telling. And, you know, not everybody agrees with that practice. And I suppose I can kind of understand their point. It's a subtle, subtle, subtle difference that you have to pay attention to within yourself. When I went against my mind, it was because I wanted to go against my mind. That's the subtle difference.
You have to do it with your heart.
You have to do it with your heart. Yeah. You know, I was still, even though my mind was telling me to be annoyed and all that, but I wanted to overcome this conditioning. I wanted to be free of this conditioning. And so I chose to do the opposite. If you're somehow forcing yourself out of a sense of guilt, like you're bad if you listen to your conditioning, you're trying to force yourself into behaving differently, it's not going to work. It's going to create even more friction within, right? So it's not the what fully, it's also the why behind the what. What's behind the reason you're choosing not to listen to your mind? You guys got that immediately. I didn't even have to say it. You totally understood. I'm happy about that. Okay, so verses 6 to 9. Remember this. Whoever sows sparingly shall also reap sparingly. And whoever sows generously shall also reap generously. This means what you give, you experience. Your actions within the world are not important in themselves. They cannot be. The world is not real, and you, in truth, are not in the world. You are a mind, or we could say awareness, experiencing yourself in a world that does not exist. But as you seem to act in the world based on your belief that you are in the world, the belief and the delusion continues within the mind. As you sow delusion, you shall experience delusion. This is to give nothing and to experience nothing as if it is real. This is simply to dream. This is to engage in fantasy. It is nothing, although it may frighten you. So again, if I continue my belief in the world and I'm acting on my belief in the world, and you know, even stuff as simple as acting on, you're disturbing me, what I'm doing is important, you know, then what I do is I re-emphasize every idea of the world. I re-emphasize the idea of the false self. I re-emphasize the idea of things outside of the world, outside in the world affect me here. You know, I just re-emphasize everything. So that would be to sow sparingly. To sow generously is to act in an opposite way, to not believe the mind. One of the single quiet thoughts that I got from the Holy Spirit one time was something like, to listen to me is not to listen to the ego. So in other words, you know, lots of people will say, I can't hear Holy Spirit. And the real reason they say that is they still have a fantasy about what Holy Spirit is, I think. But they'll say, I don't hear Holy Spirit. But what Holy Spirit was saying in that particular single quiet thought is, if you just don't listen to ego, you are listening to me. It's that simple. You can hear ego, right? Well, don't do that. You know, it's loud. You hear it easily. Don't do that. And you're listening to me because I'm always going to be the opposite, right? So that's a pretty easy way to look at it. And you know, some traditions still, we don't use this so much in our world, so hopefully it's not confusing in our American world. But some traditions still call what we are calling Holy Spirit, they call it conscience. Not the type of conscience that says I'm guilty if I do this, but the type of conscience that knows, you know, what to do and what not to do. You know, and most people that become, you know, pretty strong criminals or pretty strong murderers or something like that, if you talk to them, if you get the opportunity to interview them or read an interview, they will tell you that that conscience was there and they knew when they were crossing a line. And then once they crossed a line, that became easier. And then there was another line and they crossed that line, right? So conscience is sometimes even another good way of looking at it. If we can get away from the idea of guilt, because the idea of guilt is never helpful, but our conscience knows. I mean, you could say it was my conscience that knew it was better to turn my attention to my daughter than to say, you know, you're annoying me, go away, right? So, you know, the word Holy Spirit sometimes can be confusing for people because, again, they have these fantasies about what Holy Spirit is. But if we can talk about conscience, if we can talk about common sense, you know, if we can talk about all these types of, you know, intuition, all these types of things that we all have, And we all know, we just have to get the idea of guilt out of them, right? That guidance is always there. And it's really quite simple to know and follow it if you want to, right? Obviously, the people who keep crossing the lines until they're mass murderers, they want it to cross the lines. Yeah.
I always feel like, not always, but very often, false identity feels very powerful, and so I'm not so focused on it, you know, on what I do or what I don't do, because for me the problem has always been beating myself up for what I do, beat myself for what I don't do, and so for me I'm more inclined to focus on my reactions to my actions, because that to me that's where the loop.
Yeah, and what will happen is as you become non-judgmental, then you'll probably move into looking more at the...
That's what I found,
Then you'll move into looking at the doing and the not doing as much. But I do agree that you have to get the guilt out of it first, and that's what you're talking about.
Yes.
You're talking about getting the guilt out of it first, and that is a first stage.
Yeah.
And the guilt comes from your own judgment.
Right.
Right. Yes, ma'am.
The whole issue of... also calling this conscience is a little bit counter to what Tom and I have been looking at recently with the idea of the whole idea of there being right and wrong.
That's why I say in our tradition, our American tradition, we have the idea of guilt caught up with the word conscience.
Right.
Not all traditions have that.
Right.
So that's why we don't tend to use the word conscience as much.
But, you know, it's even like what Francine was asking Bettino about the other day, you know, just this whole idea of, well, surely there's something that's wrong. For example, and I think I missed the first part of the question, but for example, people who would abuse children. So there is a right and wrong.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, the closer you get to truth, I mean, everything is such a friggin' paradox. Okay? Because Bentino said this too. At the end of that, he said, however, I don't want anybody to think I'm endorsing rape. You know, he knows.
Right.
You know? And nobody who's awakened is going around raping children or starting wars. Right? Because as you become right-minded, guess what follows that? Right action. You know what that means?
So you said you become more ethical.
That's right. There is a right action. But here's the problem. This is the paradox. If you're sitting around judging wrong action, you're still in the wrong mind. And you're going to follow that wrong mind in whatever way you do. You might not follow the wrong mind by raping children. You might not follow the wrong mind by starting wars because you're not president. You don't have that opportunity, right? But you will follow the wrong mind by losing your temper with your loved ones. You know, you may at some time follow the wrong mind by noticing you got a little too much change back and just deciding to pocket it. And see, judgment is the wrong mind, right? So if you're judging war, judging rapists, you're in your wrong mind and you're going to follow your wrong mind.
Right, of course, that's why I brought up what I did, which is when you say conscience,
yes.
People hear right and wrong.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're using right mind and wrong mind too. I mean, how do you avoid these words?
Yeah.
I mean, we all know that there is a higher and a lower way to be, for lack of better words. Now, the trick is, if someone is in the lower position now, maybe even seemingly stuck in the lower position, this does not make them a bad person. See, that's the trick. They're in this lower place right now. They're listening to lower energy thoughts. They're believing lower energy thoughts. They're acting out of lower energy thoughts. But they're not guilty.
Right.
Right. Right.
And also, there's nothing that they can, that level of consciousness cannot act above its...
That's absolutely true.
Consciousness.
That's absolutely true. And, you know, and at some point, we were all at a lower level of consciousness. And nobody knows for sure, and that's why we call it grace, nobody knows for sure what causes the little awakenings. There's many awakenings all along the way that shift you from one level of consciousness to another. Suffering gets a lot of credit for a lot of people. Yeah. You suffer enough, you have an awakening. But that's what happens. It's like there's these little mini awakenings that you could, you know, if you imagine vibrational levels, right? You're operating along at one vibrational level, and then you have this mini awakening which shifts you to the next vibrational level. And then you begin to operate at a slightly higher level. And then there's another mini awakening that seems to shift you to another level. So people who are operating at the lower vibrational level are not guilty. However, every single person that's at a higher vibrational level knows the choices they are making is not in anyone's best interest. Not in their own best interest, not in their family's best interest, not in the world's best interest. So, you know, this is the paradox, right? There is no right and wrong, and there is right and wrong. Both are true. Does that make sense to you? Yeah. And again, that's where the conscience comes in, if you can take the guilt out of it. Your conscience does know that right or wrong without the guilt in it. It does know to take this next action will not be in your best interest or anybody else's best interest, you know. So if you can choose not to take that action, that will be in everyone's best interest. Yeah. It doesn't even have to be learned. It doesn't have to be learned. This is something that's built into us.
You can feel yourself stepping out of that boundary
too. You feel yourself, yeah.
Yeah, like the time when you just want to chew somebody out for something. I remember being at TTC and having my boss say some things to me and having this welling up feeling inside, but then realizing that you're just, in my mind, but you're just about to step over the boundary. Do you really want to do this?
Right.
And I had to back down, you know. I couldn't step out of that boundary.
Yeah. So
but there's also many things which we'll count ourselves guilty for, which have no, and there is no really right or wrong mind to them.
Right.
You know what I mean? So a lot of times where it might be a social taboo, where it's not right or wrong, but we feel guilt because it's got the stigma, you know, to it. So that's where, you know, it can get confused.
Well, and again, the truth is, I'll try to say this very carefully because I know the ego doesn't want this to be heard. Okay? The guilt doesn't come from what you do or don't do, no matter what. The guilt comes from self-judgment. So that's why I said even people who are at the lower level operating with all of the most wrong choices we can make, they're not guilty. What they're doing doesn't make them guilty, right? And you can be at any level, and that's still true. What you're doing or not doing doesn't make you guilty. But what makes you feel guilt is the fact that you're judging yourself.
All right, so the right action, wrong action is judging and not judging.
No, that's not what I'm saying. Can anybody say it in a different way?
Well, I mean, if there is no material consequence in an action or
yeah,
there really it's not right-minded or wrong-minded, right?
There's still right-minded or wrong-minded. We don't want to avoid that. To deny that is a mistake. There is right-minded and wrong-minded, and our goal is to become wholly right-minded.
It's like we made the judgment and we gave it the label bad and
yes,
the label good. If we don't do that labeling, there is no wrong or right, like you said, only
right,
the judgment that we make.
So the social taboo,
it's a judgment.
It's a judgment.
Yeah.
So there really is no, there's no decision to make whether I do this or don't do that. It's just a decision of whether I judge it or not. Is that?
I don't know if that's exactly true. This depends on the, I'm going to, for lack of better words, I'll say this depends on the vibrational level you're at. Because if you use the example that I was giving, I'm working away and Jasmine comes up and my thoughts are telling me she's annoying me, right? I made a choice. I was at a vibrational level at that point in my life where I could see that I had a choice. I had a choice to go with the ego urge, and on some days I did, okay? To go with the ego urge, get away, I'm busy, you're bothering me, right? Or I had the choice to very, very carefully take my hands off the keyboard, turn around, look at her, and say, what do you want? So at that vibrational level, and there may have been a lower vibrational level where it wouldn't have happened, I just would have acted from my yelling, right? But at this particular place where I was, I had that choice. Some days I made the right choice. Some days I made the wrong choice. But I was also at a place then when I was able to not judge myself no matter which choice I made. I did not say, oh, I'm good because today I made the right choice. And I did not say, oh, I'm bad because today I made the wrong choice. Because I was able to make the choices and observe the effects of the choices without judgment, I learned more and more and more to make the right choice. Because when you observe the choice without judgment, you see the effects. You learn that the annoyance that you have, the increased annoyance by saying, get away, you know, that increased everything here is not what you want. The child running off crying is not what you want, you know. But in order to really realize that is not what I want, there has to be no judgment in it. The judgment has to be let go first.
Okay, so let's say something like monogamy.
Monogamy, yes. Getting, yes.
We here in the West, we embrace monogamy.
Yeah. At least we're supposed to embrace monogamy.
Right. There is no... Who's to say whether there's any inherent value in monogamy?
Right. I agree with you 100%.
But there's guilt that might go along with cheating on a spouse or even agreeing that, you know, we'll see people outside of marriage.
So the guilt.
There is guilt. There is guilt.
Guilt comes from what?
From self-judgment.
Yes.
So what I'm saying is that there's no, at that point, monogamy, it's not right or wrong.
No.
And so, you know what I mean? Like, when we were talking before, you know, there's some, we do know right and wrong, and we aspire to that. But something like monogamy can, it really doesn't have any inherent value.
It's a more gray area. Now, my guess is that the higher you are in vibrational level, if you have a commitment to a person, you'll probably either A, keep the commitment, or let them know that you can't any longer.
Right?
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when I was with Ron, and I knew that I was being guided to join in relationship with Laurent, before I stepped into that relationship with Laurent, I went to Ron and let him know I was making this change. I was already at a vibrational level that was high enough that I did not want to go into deceit, because deceit is wrong-minded.
Right, but deceit is
wrong-minded. You recall talking about how you had to question, and I think there's a stage that you go through here, because you have to question how you were valuing honesty.
Yes.
You remember telling that story?
Yes.
So this is the same thing that he's talking about.
Yes.
And I can't.
Well, when I was talking about that, I was talking about judging others. I still found that I needed to be honest myself.
Right.
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 But
so that's what I think that's all.
So you're talking about judging others?
No, I'm actually. You were at a point where you were talking about that there is something inherent within us.
Something knows.
Which knows what's right and wrong.
Yeah.
Or right-minded and wrong-minded.
Yes, again, we can't avoid the words, but yeah.
Then when you get to something like monogamy,
yeah,
where...
Well, again, that's why I said, so monogamy, right? Monogamy itself is nothing. But when you get into, if you get more into the level of, I know that this person and I have an understanding.
Right.
And I know that this person is expecting me to be monogamous. And you know within yourself, then there's something in you that says, now if I choose not to with this understanding, this is deceit. See, that's a slightly different thing than if
right.
you're in another country where it's open, nobody does it. You know what I mean? You know, so monogamy itself is not right or wrong.
Right.
But you know what your relationship is. You know what promises you've made
right.
to one another. You know what's expected. You
right.
know if you're about to hurt someone.
Yes.
So you know these things.
Okay.
You know, that it's not difficult discernment. And when
right.
you and when you know all of that, and then you also know that you've chosen to cross a line. Anybody who's ever started a secret affair, deceit, they knew they were crossing a line.
Yes.
Yeah.
Also, and what I'm saying, though, also is that monogamy, even if it's agreed upon.
Yeah.
Right? Or not, you know.
Right. There are people who have open relationships.
Open relationships.
Yes.
There is... still there could still be guilt that goes along with
it. And that would be purely self-judgment in that case. Because I know people who have completely open relationships. Both partners are agreeing to that.
So it's not even...
So there's no deceit there.
The only question is the judgment then.
Then it would only be a question of the judgment. And you're right. Monogamy itself, to say it's better to be monogamous, that's a false statement. You know, these are the types of decisions that people... They're free in their relationships, you know, to make these decisions and make these agreements. There's just no rule. There's no true rule about whether it's better to be monogamous or not better to be monogamous. That doesn't exist. That's made up.
Right.
And that is cultural. Yeah. There are other cultures, they laugh at us for having that rule. So...
Thanks for letting me get to that.
Oh, no. Well, I think these are the kinds of things that are really, really tricky. And one reason it's really, really tricky is because here we are. I mean, it's like saying there is no right and wrong, and there is a right and wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, because we don't have different sets of words.
Right.
Right? So, again, you're never guilty. You're never guilty. Now, if you judge yourself, you'll feel guilty, but you're never actually guilty. But at the same time, there is right-minded thinking and right-minded action. And as you let go of the lower self, the ego, whatever you want to call it, more and more and more, you're going to come from that right-mindedness more and more and more. Which means, you know, like you said, Bentino said, you'll become more ethical. You won't want to be deceitful. You just won't want to. It's not who you, it's not a part of your fiber anymore, right? So, and that's really our purpose. Our purpose is to become wholly right-minded and wholly right-acting. But we can't get to wholly right-minded and wholly right-acting and hold on to judgment. So this takes us back to Francine's question. This is why you in order to let go of judgment, you have to let go of judgment. So you can't hold on to judgment and say, going to church is good, killing people in war is bad, right? Sending children to college is good, raping children is bad. You know, even though ultimately, you know, that's not right action, if you hold on to that judgment, you're going to stay in your own wrong mind. You stay in your own vibrational level. You never ascend. Mm-hmm. Right? So, as ironic as it is, letting go of the judgment of good and bad is what moves you to the point of being wholly good, if that makes any sense at all.
It does. Yeah, because there is no opposite. There is no opposite.
There is no opposite. Yeah. The judgment is what creates the opposite.
Right.
That's what creates the duality. So judgment is something we have to learn to let go of, and spiritual teachers will, you know, use all kinds of angles to approach us. But some of these questions, you know, are just so difficult. In fact, if I remember correctly, what Bentino was really insisting with Francine was he kind of kept saying, you're just saying you won't let go of that judgment. You won't let go of that. He was pushing the point that she wanted to hold on to the belief that raping a child is wrong. And why was he pushing that point? To get her to the point where she'd say, oh, I guess I need to let go of this.
There is a choice.
Yeah, because she does. We all do. We have to let go of that. Even though we're not going to rape children. And if we find out about a child that's raped, we'll take whatever actions we can to remove that child from the situation or to get that child help. We're always going to be, you know, this is where the idiocy comes in. There's nothing wrong with raping a child. Therefore, when I see a child raped, I will do nothing. We all know. You can feel that, right?
Yeah.
See, you have a conscience. That's not right.
I can call my friends and tell them I have one.
Yeah, there really is something in us that knows. It knows. But we got to get the guilt out of it. We got to get the judgment out of it.
That judgment is so rooted that, you know, it's very difficult. You know, like I was right where Francine was when he was pushing her, and I'm trying to analyze myself and all that. The only thing I could come up with is for, like, when Jesus said at the cross, and you've mentioned this before, forgive them, for they know not
yes.
what they do.
Yes.
If we could see it that way, maybe we could kind of let go of that judgment, but it is so rooted.
Yeah. We do need helpful thought. I perceive, as my way, I needed helpful thoughts to get me to let go of judgment. You know, I couldn't just let it go. I needed some kind of helpful thoughts, bridge thoughts.
And now what you said tonight was real helpful in saying that we're never guilty. We're never guilty.
Never guilty.
We can just say that about anybody that's doing whatever they're doing. They're never guilty. And then remember what Jesus said. Maybe that might be helpful, because what you said there really was helpful to me.
Well, we were talking to my sister recently, because they're teaching Bryn Haskell's book, and they're doing the chapter on oneness. Mm-hmm. And it's talking about love being allowance. Love,
yes,
allows
all
things.
Things.
Yeah. And that's that wholeness that you were talking about a moment ago. And that's why judgment is not helpful.
Yeah.
Because it's the opposite of the allowance that love is.
Yes, and another thought that was given to me that was really helpful, some of you may have heard this quote, it is, love is giving through Spirit to Spirit that which Spirit requests. Mm-hmm. You know, which means if people still want to believe they're separate, if they still want to believe they're attacked, then love finds a way to give them that perception, right? So there are... It would be fun maybe to collect all of the helpful thoughts that help us to let go of judgment. I'm sure that there are many of them.
Good assignment.
Yeah, it's a good assignment. Well, even the story of the tiny mad idea as it's told in NTI, the reason the story is told that way is to help us see that judgment makes no sense, so that we'll let go of judgment. That's the purpose of NTI Romans. So, but yeah, judgment is the wrong mind. Judgment keeps us in the wrong mind. So if we aspire to the right mind, which I think we all do, or we wouldn't be here, right? Mm-hmm. Then one of the things we have to be willing to let go of is judgment. And that's without exception. Yeah, that's just one of the things we have to be willing to do.
I was telling Jacqueline a couple days ago that we always think of ourselves as persons having consciousness, instead of consciousness having a person.
Yeah.
And if, you know, if that switch, if you can make that switch, because believing you're a person, then all we do is we look upon these poor, abused children, or these poor, you know, if we, you know, so continuing to look on everyone as a person is such a trap.
Yeah, it is.
And it's just willful consciousness unfolding.
Yeah. All right, good. So we'll move on then. I think we all got that. I'm glad we talked about that, because, again, these are the types of things, and I'm certain it's ego. It can't be clarity. But these are the types of things that ego just loves to confuse us on. Oh, there's no right or wrong. Well, then I can just, you know, beat the hell out of her. You know? And like, there's no right or wrong. You're not guilty if you beat the hell out of her. And you still shouldn't, you know, because it's still not right-minded action, right? I mean, you know. And she'd probably move out, and then what? All right, so as you sow delusion, you shall experience delusion. Let's move to sentence 14. Step away from fear. Be willing to see that fantasy isn't reality. Give unto yourself by willing not to continue thoughts of non-giving. Relax into your trust in me. As you continue to believe in the world, act on your trust in me. This is not an action in the world, for there is no world, but this is giving, because this is telling the mind that the truth must be true. This is waking up from the dream by not participating in the belief in the dream anymore. So again, even though the words right action and wrong action are not here, that's exactly what this paragraph is asking us to do when it says, act on your trust in me. It's asking you to act only from your right mind. Even if your wrong mind is, you know, see the wrong mind. And again, you never, ever deny the wrong mind. You never. It's never helpful to deny the wrong mind. You see the wrong mind. You acknowledge the wrong mind. And then you just kind of choose not to follow it. Right? But you never deny it. So if your mind is telling you to be really annoyed, you know, by this interrupting child right now, then you recognize the mind wants me to be really annoyed by this interrupting child right now. I can feel the energy of being annoyed by this interrupting child right now. But I choose to give this child my attention and see what she wants. You see how that works? You choose right action. Because as you choose right action, you reinforce the right mind. As you choose wrong action, you reinforce the wrong mind. And which one do you want to reinforce? You know, that answer real easy, right? So, that's the correct answer, the right mind. So, you know, it's interesting because up until this point in NTI, we've been talking mostly about thoughts. Choose your right thoughts. Choose to let go of your wrong-minded thoughts, right? Your ego thoughts. But now it's taking another step, but it's really saying that that step is the same thing. Right? Because if I choose to say, go away, you annoying little girl, didn't I first choose to listen to that thought and believe that thought and buy that thought? If even though my mind is telling me, annoying little girl, and I choose to turn around and give her my attention, aren't I choosing to let go of that thought? Right? Your action always follows the thought you choose to believe. You can tell what you're believing by what you're doing. Okay? Action always follows the thought. So if you can choose to change your action, that means you are also changing your thought. Right?
That could be going about from a judgmental point of view, though.
Well, again, you have to remember the heart of what I'm speaking from here. Okay. I'm talking about changing your mind because you want to be right-minded, not because you're judging yourself as bad.
Yeah. You spoke about doing the action to change the thought.
No, doing the action means that, okay, let me say that again. Let me keep going to the example I'm using. So when I have my mind telling me, annoying little girl, go away, and I'm recognizing that's the wrong mind, I don't want the wrong mind, and so I turn around and I say, yes, what do you want? My action is a symbol of the fact that I chose not to believe the wrong mind.
I heard it backwards.
Yeah.
I thought I heard you say you're going to do that action and it would change the thought.
No, action follows thought.
I got it.
Okay? Action follows thought. So if I choose a different action, then it means that I chose the other thought. Otherwise, I just would have said, go away, you annoying little girl. Right? So what this is really saying is that there's a real close connection between your action and your thinking. So this is saying, instead of just watching your thinking, also watch your acting. And in fact, as we move forward in NTI, NTI is going to ask us to watch our body, watch our acting, in order to get a better idea about what we're believing. Because remember, we talked a minute ago about how those thoughts are so fast, you don't even see them. But if you start watching your body, what's your body doing? Well, what your body's doing is showing you what you're believing, right? So it's kind of a scientific way of finding those thoughts that you can't see because they go by so fast. If I'm walking around yelling all day long at people, obviously I'm buying some kind of thoughts of it shouldn't be that way, right? Because I wouldn't be yelling at people all day long unless I was wanting everything to be different than it is. So
even to the point of how your body is feeling at any given time, if
you're tense,
constriction or something like that, then it happened here first.
Yes, exactly. So action follows thought, but if you're not able to see the thought, sometimes you become aware of the thought by paying attention to the action. But again, what's really important about all this is it has to be without judgment. Right? That's the key. You're watching to learn. Right? But you can't be doing it with judgment. So it all has to be coming from the heart. It has to be coming from the right motive. The right motive of being willing to see your mistakes so that you can transcend your mistakes. Right? You can't transcend what you don't see. You can't transcend what you don't deny. So you want to catch yourself wrong so that you can transcend that. Right? Yeah. So we're getting into some heavier stuff here, you know, but we're all perfectly capable of doing it. Yeah. So let's see, verses 10 and 11. The mind knows its own thoughts and it reacts to them. The world is not real. It is a delusion of the mind, but it is the delusion of one mind. There are no separate minds with separate delusions. The thoughts you think are heard by one mind, and they affect the fantasy in the mind. When you tell the mind that the world is not real, both through your thought and your seeming action, the world hears this thought through the mind, because the world is a thought in the mind. The world will react as the mind reacts to the thoughts that have been given it. Now, this is really still saying that the world is a projection of the mind. You know, so, and what this is also saying is that as each one of us choose to accept awakening ourself, the entire world is affected for the better, for lack of any other word to choose, right? So as I choose to let go of listening to my ego thoughts, even if they're completely loud, and I choose to act opposite of the ego, because I know that's right-minded acting and I want to act with the right mind, what this is saying is that what I am doing, I'm not only doing it for myself, but I'm doing it for the whole sonship. And as I get better and better at, or more and more skilled at right thinking and right action, this actually sends some kind of a signal or a vibration through the entire mind, and maybe this is a part of what causes someone else to shift now from that, from a lower vibration to a next higher vibration, right? So this is saying, again, you're not a person. There's a whole lot more going on here than meets the eye. You aren't a bad person who's learning to be good, right? This is a sleeping mind that is awakening to truth. And it's all one mind. And your part in it, even as you're going through, you know, part of this path, at some point it actually gets easier. But part of this path is actually a struggle, right? It's kind of like if you have, you know, like a pendulum, it's always been swinging left to right, left to right, left to right. And now this pendulum needs to start swinging front to back. It takes a lot of effort to get that pendulum to stop and to start reversing its swing. But once it starts reversing its swing, guess what? It's not effort anymore. So there's a temporary period of effort, all right? And what this is saying is that temporary period of effort is worth it. You know, because again, you're not just doing this for yourself. You are being helpful beyond your human imagination. So it is worth it, even though you're having to maybe struggle a little bit hard to not listen to your ego mind and to choose right action with your heart, for example. To not scream at the little girl. Or to not judge yourself when you do scream at the little girl. You know, this is because it's opposite your conditioning and you're having to put a lot of effort into it. But it's saying it's worth it. It's worth it beyond measure. As you accept that the world is not real and therefore can have no effect on you, the mind will begin to awaken by seeing for itself that a dream cannot affect the reality of existence as it is. Now listen to this next paragraph. This service that you perform of not believing in the world and of not acting as if the world is real is a service you provide for yourself and for the entirety of the one mind that you are. No part of the mind is left out of the benefits of this service you perform. Through your service and your true dedication to this service, the mind is awakened to truth through what it learns. Through your faith, you are a teacher, and through your teaching, you are awakened by all that you learn. So again, it's worth it because, again, it's not only about you, primarily because there is no only you. Right? You know, I mean, everything you do is for everyone. So, we need an assignment. And to me, there's an obvious assignment. See if there's an opportunity this week when your mind is really telling you to do something that is wrong action, right? Wrong-minded action. And see if, for the right reasons, not because you're bad if you do, but just because you want to be fully right-minded at some point, that's what you aspire to, see if you can choose to not listen to that encouragement to be wrong-minded and instead take whatever action you know is right-minded. And sometimes the right-minded action is no action. Like you were about to tell somebody something and you choose to say nothing, right? Oh, sirens. I couldn't tell what that noise was. Somebody took a wrong action, I guess. Yeah. So, see if you have an opportunity, no matter how small. It doesn't have to be huge. It can be small. I'm okay with that because it's all the same. Small and big doesn't really matter. It could be the smallest little thing you want to say, and then you realize that's coming from ego and you choose not to say it. All right, I will stop the recorder and we'll have a few moments of silence.